KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress. For this week's public health updates held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic, Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry.
Looking at case numbers nationally, we are starting to see some improvement on the national level. The South is continuing to improve. We are unfortunately starting to see slowing of improvement and really plateauing in much of the country, including the West, which is concerning because that plateau is still very high. At this point, we are still seeing about 2,000 Americans die of COVID-19 a day. We are seeing approximately 100,000 Americans diagnosed with COVID-19 every day. So things are better than they were, but they are still the case rates are still incredibly high. And unfortunately, the death rates are high as well. One thing we worry about in the public health sphere is we get these peaks and then we see them decrease. And as actually, I think we talked about last week, people start to go back to more normal behavior. And it seems like as a people, we do it earlier and earlier. And so these plateaus keep creeping up and up and up, and that can be dangerous because the higher the plateau, the easier it is to trigger another spike, and the higher that subsequent peak is. And we're definitely seeing that play out nationally as well as in the West. In Washington, case rates are slowly decreasing as well. So Washington, we're seeing about a 14% decrease in cases and a 15% decrease in hospitalizations. That still has about 2,400 people diagnosed with COVID-19 every day, and 1,400 people in the hospital right now. We're certainly still seeing significant transmission, primarily east side of the mountains and kind of southern Washington. Jefferson is really ahead of the pack on improvements. So we have the second lowest rate in the state, but it is still quite high. So our current case rate is 226 per 100,000. We're second only to San Juan County as far as our current case rates, but that just shows how bad it is in much of the rest of the state. There are currently 48 ICU beds available in the state, so things are still pretty tight on that realm, but things have improved quite a bit on the hospitalization end here. We have no one currently at Jefferson Healthcare with COVID-19. We have one Clallam County citizen who is still hospitalized out of county, and I think it's important to acknowledge that person has been hospitalized for over a month. I think it's good for folks to know how severe this can be. That's a person who was otherwise healthy before they got sick, and has now had to have advanced respiratory support and be hospitalized for over a month. That can happen with COVID. It can really dramatically change your life, especially we're seeing that much more common in people who are unvaccinated. Regionally, we are seeing improvement, but also some plateauing as well. In Clallam County, the current case rate is 553 per 100,000. In Kitsap County, it's 472. Those, of course, are better than they were, but are, again, incredibly high. Our current total number of cases in Jefferson County is 1,053. As far as where our cases are coming from, right now, most of our cases in the last few days are household contacts of known positive cases. We are not seeing widespread community transmission like we've seen in earlier days. We are still seeing folks get COVID from traveling, and then household contacts here. We did have a cluster related to the Brennan School District. Total of 16 cases related to that cluster, 9 of which were traced to school. Primarily, the risk factor we found there was busing. Kids have to travel a very long distance on those buses, and they were not eligible for vaccination yet. The school's doing a really good job, and we have not seen additional cases from that. And we have not seen any other cases in any of our other school districts. But I think this does highlight that our unvaccinated kids are at risk of contracting COVID-19, even if everybody does the right thing. Primary risk factors we do see, as we've seen in other areas, shared transportation. Buses are a risk. It's certainly the schools do everything they can to mitigate that risk. But if you're in a small shared airspace for a prolonged period of time, there is a risk of contracting COVID-19, even if you do everything right. And I think it's important to acknowledge for many of our children, there is no other way to get to school. And so we know that it's a risk, and we're going to keep doing everything we can to mitigate it. All of these kids are doing well. There are 3 adults affected as well, and they are all doing well as well. So we are hopeful that that one will be wrapping up very soon. We don't have any active long-term care facility outbreaks at this point. So all in all, doing really quite well, but there's still certainly significant transmission. There's certainly significant amounts of cases in our community. And what I worry about is as we move into the fall and winter, we know we're going to get another spike related to that. And we want to be in a better spot as we move into the fall. We want to see our cases lower so that we are less likely to see the kind of severe peak that we saw most recently. The lower we get our cases as we move into the holiday season, the lower our subsequent peak will be, and the less likely we will be to have a significant peak. It's important to remember, as we experienced with Brennan, there are still many people in our community, mostly children, who do not have access to the vaccine. And so it's really important for their sake, those who cannot get vaccinated, that those of us who can do. We do know that getting vaccinated dramatically decreases your risk of contracting COVID-19, as well as your risk of getting hospitalized for COVID-19. So currently in our region, you are 9 times more likely to get COVID if you are unvaccinated. And then you are up to 26 times more likely to get hospitalized if you are unvaccinated. It really does make a difference to reduce transmission in our community and to reduce subsequent strain on our hospital system. The only other thing, a couple of things I want to touch base on the vaccine, and there was a lot of concern around the governor's vaccine mandate when it comes to healthcare workers. I wanted to share some good news on that front. So I was just on a call this morning with Jefferson Healthcare, and they have done a fantastic job getting their employees vaccinated. It looks like they're only going to lose 3 employees as a result of the mandate. So that's really, really positive news. Of course, we don't want to lose anyone, but they are not going to be seeing significant changes in their staffing levels related to the mandate. And of course, they now have staff who are safer, safer for each other and safer for their patients. And so we're really happy to see that result and the work that's been going on there. The only other thing I want to touch base on when it comes to vaccines, you might have seen last week, there was a lot of news around, unfortunately, one woman in Seattle got a severe clot related to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's called a dural venous thrombosis. It's incredibly rare, but it is associated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I think one thing that we have not been good enough about explaining and educating about is dural venous thrombosis is also significantly associated with COVID-19 infection. You are 10 times more likely to get a dural venous thrombosis from COVID-19 itself than from the vaccine. So we do really, we still recommend getting vaccinated. It is still much safer than getting COVID-19. And that's just for dural venous thrombosis. COVID-19 also leads to clots in multiple other organs. So pulmonary embolus, deep venous thrombosis, and of course, all the other severe complications of COVID-19. But I think there's a common misconception that COVID only affects your lungs, and it doesn't. It causes generalized inflammation of your entire body and a dramatic increased risk of clotting. It's a tragedy that someone lost their life in the Seattle area, but many, many more lose their lives every day due to COVID-19, and we can prevent that. The only thing when it comes to J&J to note is that incredibly low risk of dural venous thrombosis is higher in young women of reproductive age. And so for women in that category, we do actually preferentially recommend an mRNA vaccine. So one of the other highly available, highly effective vaccines out there. So either a Pfizer or a Moderna vaccine that does have a better safety profile for young women. It is all three are authorized for young women, but our recommendation is to preferentially get one of the mRNA vaccines if you're in that age cohort. Otherwise, we are watching flu. We're keeping an eye out for influenza arriving in our community. We have not had any positive cases on the Olympic Peninsula yet. We're seeing very, very low level activity in Washington State as a whole. So at this point, we're not seeing significant flu activity, but it is a really good time to get your flu shot. We want you well vaccinated before the flu gets here so that we can prevent a significant surge of flu as well as COVID-19. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Heidi or Greg?
I don't have any questions this week.
I lost my audio for a moment, so I missed the last part of what you said, Dr. Berry. I hope that it was not as important as the first part.
We're not seeing a lot of flu. Get vaccinated for both. So if you haven't gotten a COVID-19 vaccine, please get vaccinated right away. It's very effective. It's very, very safe. And if you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, that's also widely available and recommended for nearly everyone. Basically 6 months and up, we recommend a flu vaccine.
I got two easy questions. One with the flu vaccine, it always seems like it's a little bit of a gamble, you know, kind of a calculated gamble, whether we got the right one in the flu shot. I'm wondering if there's any early data on how effective the flu vaccine might be this year. And the second question is, what's up with these Merck antiviral pills? Is that going to be a significant tool in the toolbox if they get approved?
So when it comes to flu, too early to know about whether or not we match the strain. It's going to be a challenge this year because usually we base the vaccine on last year's flu strain. And as everybody knows, we kind of didn't have the flu last year. And so it's going to be more complex to pick that strain. It's always more than one strain. I believe it's four that you're going to be seeing in the flu vaccine this year. So we don't know yet, but it is still the best protection we have against the flu. And a good reminder that masks are also protective against the flu. So wearing a mask in indoor areas will reduce transmission of influenza as well. As far as the Merck antivirals, they are likely to be an important tool in the toolbox. So they have shown efficacy at reducing hospitalization in people at high risk of severe COVID-19 illness of 50%. So very effective in that cohort. They haven't been tested in the general population. They're really primarily focusing on these high-risk folks. And so they are very likely to augment and or replace monoclonal antibodies. They won't replace vaccination. They won't replace everything else we're doing. But monoclonal antibodies are an important tool, but kind of problematic. They're very expensive. They take a long time. They require someone who's positive with COVID-19 to come into a healthcare facility and sit there for an hour, which has a lot of infection control complexity related to it. The antivirals are an oral pill. And so we could prescribe them. You wouldn't have to go anywhere. And so I think that is very likely to be an important tool in the toolbox. Once it's fully approved and distributed, we're not quite there yet.
And to follow up, it seems like it's most effective along with a sufficient supply of testing. Is that correct? That it's like it needs to be taken kind of an early preventer of serious illness is really what I've
read. Yes. So you need to get, if you get an antiviral, and same with monoclonal antibodies, actually, you need to get it, it's most effective in the first week after your symptom onset. And so it's really important to get tested right away. We have seen, by and large, Jefferson County is doing a good job on testing. We're seeing only 5% positivity on our tests, which is really quite good given the amount of home tests that people are using. And people are testing pretty quickly. But in some other areas, Clallam County included, we're seeing a lot of people waiting a long time to get tested. And so then, unfortunately, by the time they get their result, it's too late for those medicines to work. So if you are sick, if you feel like you have a cold, if you feel like you have the flu, if you realize you can't smell or taste anything, go get tested right away. It's really important to get those tests rapidly because we have medicine for you now, but most of it needs to be given quickly.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. I reflect often on how much we've learned in the last 18 months. And I'm curious, what do we know about kind of how, besides the interventions, public health interventions, including vaccination, what else can we be doing to keep ourselves either preventing ourselves, likelihood of contracting COVID, and then also kind of severity of disease? Are there supplements? Have we learned that anything is effective in kind of preventing, lifestyle choices that either prevent and or then lessen severity?
Still the most effective things in preventing COVID-19 are getting vaccinated, are wearing a mask. We've learned a lot more about ventilation. Ventilation makes a big difference, making sure that if you're gathering your outdoors, it really does make it a lot safer. And then also being mindful of your social circles too. I think that's one where a lot of us lag. We got our vaccine. We wear a mask when we go to the grocery store, but we're starting to hang out with a whole lot of people. So being thoughtful about keeping that social circle somewhat small and as much as possible limited to people who are vaccinated, that does make a huge difference as far as your risk to each other. As far as other things that we can do to prevent severe COVID-19, one of the things that we know is that if you are really sick with other things, so if you have poorly controlled diabetes, if you've got poorly controlled hypertension, those all put you at risk of more severe COVID. So keeping your other health well controlled is important. So if you have any of those chronic conditions, make sure you're checking in with your doctor, that you're well managed, and that you're really teed up when it comes to things like that. Make sure your sugars are in good control, you're eating right, exercising. All those things do make your immune system respond better to anything, not just COVID. And so taking care of yourself, getting some sleep, eating right, exercising. There's not any one supplement that we generally recommend for this kind of thing, but just living a healthy lifestyle does make a difference. Not enough to make it so you don't need to get vaccinated. It's not that powerful, but it is a good adjunct to those other things. And I know myself, I have to work on the sleep part. So we all have things we could do better. And taking care of ourselves now is very important.
Can I follow up on that question a little bit? I'm still frustrated that we don't have in more regular operation, maybe even in school buses, CO2 or carbon monoxide meters, so we can evaluate objectively the air quality and how quickly it's circulating through any confined space. And I'm wondering, is there more that we can do with that? I mean, they're very expensive. I just don't know why they haven't become part of the mitigating toolbox.
I think it's a great question. For whatever reason, I do think airflow monitoring has not quite taken off the way it probably should. That way we could really know, are we getting good air exchange? And we have had some good experiences when we first started moving toward kind of semi-outdoor restaurants to really say like, okay, if CO2 in here is the same as it is outside, you're getting good air circulation and you're safer in here. I do think, especially when it comes to schools, that's a place where we could do a lot better. I think the biggest limitation that's been making it not get taken up is, I think a lot of people don't know. They don't know that technology is available. And there's a bandwidth issue. So I think the schools are, there's only so much more they can take on. But I think that is a space where if there were, folks in the community who are knowledgeable in the subject who want to kind of take on a project to assist our schools or things like that, I think that's a place where we could do some work as a community. I know we have some highly skilled folks who are mostly retired that would love to throw their expertise behind this kind of work. And that's, I think we'd be happy to partner on that kind of thing. But CO2 monitors would be good. I think the other thing I sometimes see in reticence there is when it comes to the schools, say you get a CO2 monitor that says you're not getting good air circulation. Do we have the funds or the ability to do anything about it? And that's the other challenge, making sure that the COVID-19 has really highlighted disparities and challenges in our society as a whole and places where we have not properly invested, including the infrastructure of our schools, is certainly one.
Right. So some KPDZ questions, Dr. Berry.
For the first time since I took this job, Willie has more questions than me, so I'll just knock these out real fast, and then I'll send it over to Willie. So a couple things. One question was about the order when it comes to restaurants and bars. So if you are getting to-go, a to-go order, do you have to be fully vaccinated? You do not. Really what we're trying to limit is gathering indoors, unvaccinated and unmasked. So if you can keep a mask on, which you do when you're getting your to-go orders, or I certainly hope you do, then you don't have to be fully vaccinated for that. So it's a good option for those who either can't get vaccinated or who have not yet been fully vaccinated. You can get to-go orders or you can utilize outdoor dining. And we discussed this a little bit, the idea of community spread. So there's a technical term called community transmission. That means there are cases in the community that people are getting and we don't know where it's coming from. They either have too many connections or we tried an intense tracing. We still can't find where the source was. We're not seeing that in Jefferson County right now. We are seeing people contracting the virus locally, so local transmission, but it is we are seeing that less than people contracting the virus by leaving the county, which makes sense, right? So we have the second lowest case rate in the state. So if you go out of the county, you are more likely to pick up COVID out there than if you stay local or if you have out-of-county guests. And it's a good reminder, it's really close contact. So it's your friends, your family, people who are coming and spending time in your home. That's really where we're seeing the transmission. It's not actually tourism at this point. The only other question someone's been following along very closely. So there was a Clallam County citizen who lodged a complaint with the State Board of Health that the based on a misunderstanding that health officers don't have the authority to write health orders. They do. And so I doubt that's going to go very far. I'm not super concerned about it. All right. Willie.
No, awesome. Thank you very much. And thank you for, I think Mark has a quick question.
Yeah, Dr. Berry and Willie will likely talk about the clinic down in Chimicum on Saturday, but the booster shot, Pfizer booster, is it the same strength as the first two shots? Because the boosters hit me harder than either of the first two shots. So I'm curious about that.
Yes. So the booster vaccines are the exact same vaccine that you got the first time. But each time you get a boost, you know, each time you get an injection, your body has seen it before. And so your immune system is more primed to respond to it. So we do expect more side effects from each subsequent dose. So myself, I'm a frontline healthcare worker. I got a booster and I felt it. but I felt it for about 12 hours. And then the great thing about these immune responses is they're not actually the same as a real illness. It's just your immune system revving up. So giving you a fever, maybe giving you chills, making you achy or tired. But then it just stops. And it's very surprising. It's not quite what you're used to when you get a cold. So average, these tend to start about 12 to 24 hours after your dose and last for about 12 to 24 hours and then fade. Every once in a while, we see people last a couple more days, kind of mild symptoms. We don't tend to see severe responses, but it's very common to feel like you have the flu for a very short period of time.
Okay, thank you.
No worries. And then actually one brief thing on boosters, and then I'll pass it over to Willie. So we do anticipate that we are likely to see an approval of boosters for Moderna and or Johnson & Johnson, or approval for mixing the vaccines in the next week or so. We're, of course, following that very closely. DM's done a fantastic job prepping in advance so that we'll be ready to hit the ground running when it comes to boosters for the other vaccines. But we do think that's coming. We just don't know exactly for what age ranges it's going to be approved for. So stay tuned. We are also highly anticipating likely approval of the Pfizer vaccine for kids 5 to 11 by the end of the month, maybe early November, depending on when the CDC decides to meet.
All right. So, yeah, as Dr. Berry said, I actually have not only some KPTZ questions, I have more than the good doctor. So an exciting day for me. I'll start off with the KPTZ questions. Most of them dealt with the lost vaccination card issue. So I'll go and address those questions and reiterate a little bit of what I said last week. And I apologize if I was misleading or misspoke last week about exactly how you go about getting your vaccine records back, not necessarily the card itself. So if you've lost your original vaccine, that CDC, that standardized card, and the best way to go about getting your vaccine records reissued is at Washington MyR. So it's a website, it's wa.myir.net. It's Washington MyIR, and you can just Google that phrase and go find that website as well. If you have any difficulty navigating the website, finding it, you have additional questions, you can call into our call center, 360-344-9791. And so on that website, you can go and you can access your vaccination record. You can't get that exact same CDC card reissued. So you won't get it in the original format that you had it in. I know a lot of folks, they, you know, that CDC card is kind of ubiquitous at this point. But your vaccination records that you can access from that webpage, it's still going to be acceptable documentation for your employer. It's still going to get you into restaurants and the bars locally when they ask for your proof of vaccination. And it is going to be helpful for us at the vaccination clinic to again certify that, yes, you got Pfizer originally. Yes, you're 6 months out. It'll be expedite the process getting you your COVID booster. So again, wa.myar.net. You'll access your vaccine records and you can get a nice little printout you can download, add to your phone, print out a physical copy, and then bring to the clinic. You cannot get another CDC card with your original vaccine record, unfortunately. So I think that was a little bit confusing for folks. And so I apologize for that, but you can get your records through that site and we can help you walk through the whole process at our call center if it's necessary. So just wanted to clear up some confusion on that. And I think, let me make sure I addressed all the questions there. And that Washington Myar site, I will add, don't just go there if you've lost your vaccine card. Someone mentioned if they had theirs, you know, laminated or mangled or damaged, if it's hard to read. Your vaccine card can be in perfect condition too. And if you just want a redundant copy of your records, a digital copy of your records available as needed, that site is a good resource for you. So don't hesitate to log in, sign up, and have that vaccine record again as a redundant source of information. The other question asked if we're going to be scheduling additional mass vaccination clinics like the one we had just this past Saturday at Chimico. We vaccinated 635 people with their booster dose of Pfizer, County Administrator McCauley being one among them. Yes, sir.
I got to compliment you, Willie, and all the folks that were at that clinic. It was a very precise and efficient operation. I was highly impressed. And I think I told you that when I saw you. I mean, it was really a marvel. So well done.
Awesome. Thank you very much. That's appreciated. And that's a testament to all the volunteers who've been, absolutely working their butts off, not just the day of, but pre-planning. The thing that was a little bit different about this clinic was that we have a lot of the processes worked out pretty well at this point in time, but this was our first clinic using the Pfizer vaccine, our first mass vaccination clinic using Pfizer. So Pfizer takes about twice as long to draw up as Moderna. It's a little bit more complicated and requires a lot more concentration by our vaccine managers. Hats off to, and those are our public health nurses who are taking time away from contact tracing, which has already loaded their plates to help with the vaccine management at this clinic. So a testament to them. We've had lots of practice in the other areas. That was the first real kind of test for that area. So that being said, I bring that up because we are considering expanding this Saturday's clinic at Blue Heron and PT. Now that we have a little proof of concept for our ability to handle Pfizer at a mass vaccination clinic, we're hoping we can open up the mass vaccination clinic this weekend to our wait list, which as it stands right now is about 150 people on top of the 600 plus who are already scheduled. So we're really hopeful we're going to be able to accommodate a significant portion of those folks. We're going to be making a decision later today / early tomorrow after we run through our ability to safely expand. Hoping we'll be able to accommodate a little bit more next Saturday. On the following Saturday, on the 23rd, there are still plenty of appointments available down in Quilsey. So if you're looking for your spot to get in, you can still try to walk into pharmacies. We've heard mixed reports. Some folks waltzed right in, got it, and were in and out in a pretty brief period of time. Others have reported pretty long lines depending on the time of day. So our local pharmacies still are available. But if you want to ensure your spot and want to ensure you'll get the booster dose, again, plenty of spaces down in Quilcene available. And you can sign up on the public health website or, again, our call center, 344-9791. In terms of additional mass vaccination clinics for Pfizer, right now we do not have any Pfizer mass vax clinics planned. And that's because, as Dr. Berry mentioned, we have a full slate of additional booster doses / initial doses for the 5 to 11-year-old population potentially coming our way. So I will say at this point in time, the 5 to 11-year-old age group, they have not had, you know, their first dose yet. They're as of right now unvaccinated, and they're far and away going to be our priority. We want to make sure that we're able to keep them in school, keep them in school in person, and actually provide them that initial layer of protection. So we're gearing up to, again, put all of our focus and energy on our children at this point in time. And then we will have hopefully Moderna and Johnson & Johnson boosters as well. So we'll have a slate of mass vax clinics for those populations throughout the month of November. There is a chance that we'll have additional mass vaccination clinics that might be a mix of vaccines. We might have them for the Pfizer crowd a little bit later, maybe early winter. But at this point in time, nothing on the calendar, unfortunately. Again, you can seek out a dose at your local pharmacy, through your primary care physician, et cetera. But I think it's really important that one of the reasons we aren't pushing the booster dose mass vax clinics hard. Again, we have a full slate. We want to make sure our team is, we don't want to overstretch them. We want to be able to place our priorities on the 5 to 11-year-old crowd. But as I said a few weeks ago, we aren't going to boost our way out of this pandemic. Really, the data has shown that the folks that are actually truly losing some efficacy from their vaccination are the 75-year-old plus crowd. So we do want to make sure that they're able to get their booster doses. But for the most part, everyone getting their booster dose, it's more of a just-in-case type situation. The data has borne out 75-plus, certainly at risk. We want to make sure we're hitting those crowds. But again, for the most part, our focus still needs to be on unvaccinating the unvaccinated. So we're going to place our priority 5 to 11-year-olds. We'll be hosting a slew of clinics for the other different vaccines coming forward. But yeah, unfortunately, right now, just given resource limitations and all that we have coming up, no more Pfizer doses, at least for maybe a month, maybe a little bit longer as we try to knock out some other folks. So if you've gotten Pfizer, you're looking for your vaccine, head down to Quilcene, call us. We'll help you find something at a local pharmacy. And that's our plan, and those are our priorities for now.
Willie, do we know if primary care providers are also doing the boosters?
Yes. So we've been scheduling some, aside from our mass vax clinics, we've had some private clinics supported by Jefferson Healthcare that we've been helping them get booster doses for their staff, for other primary care providers, for EMS and first responders. We have some folks in the mental health community that have asked and that we've forwarded this on to, all the folks in the occupational or institutional risk setting. So we're still working through some of those. We're still open to scheduling some smaller private clinics for those who want to help get their employees vaccinated. So contact us if there's interest in that. So yeah, we're still working through those kind of on the back, less public facing.
Commissioner, were you asking if people can go to their primary care provider for a booster? Is that what you were hoping to? Yeah. So it.
I apologize.
No worries. Also, an important update. But it depends on your clinic. So not all of the clinics carry Pfizer, and so you are likely to be able to access a booster best through a local pharmacy than through your primary care office at this point in Jefferson. But it is worth, I know talking to Jefferson, they said they were happy to help their patients that can't access it another way, but you're probably gonna have the easiest time accessing it through the pharmacy. I've not heard of kind of general distribution. I know if you happen to get medical care in Clallam, Olympic Medical Center does have Pfizer. And so they'll vaccinate their patients, but it's very variable between the clinics. Most of our clinics carry Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. And so we're not quite seeing a lot of boosters in primary care office yet. If you're looking for a booster, pharmacy is the way to go.
Is that partly the storage requirements of Pfizer?
Yes.
Thank you. Willie, do you have more KPTZ questions? Or?
No, that was the end of my questions and end of my report, barring any questions from the commissioners. Yeah.
Can I just point of clarification, I guess, on the last point? The Pfizer is the one that requires the super cold. I forget what the technical jargon is. But how are pharmacies doing that? I thought there were limited machines that could keep them cold enough. Do all the pharmacies have those?
It's primarily dry ice. So they'll get a shipment in a box with dry ice, but they have to be able to move through a significant quantity of vaccine in a regimented period of time. Otherwise, you would waste all of the vaccine in that box. And the pharmacies are just really well built for that. Versus the clinics are, you know, take care of your diabetes and other things, and adding a vaccine here and there. And so it doesn't lend itself quite as well to that.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
I mean, questions for Willie?
Leaving time on the table here, Willie. I mean, rarely do you get 15 minutes. You got 3 minutes. You got something else you
want to talk about? I just don't know what to do with myself. I apologize.
It's a good sign that the community is really well informed. And we really are seeing that. You know, Jefferson has continued to be really kind of a shining example of good COVID response. And we are still seeing that. We are still seeing a lot of transmission, but we are doing much better than much of the rest of the state and country. And I just would like us to keep it that way and keep moving in that direction. Some folks have raised questions about Halloween, about whether or not that's safe. We can add that in the next couple minutes. Halloween is largely very safe for the standard kind of things that we do. So trick or treating, going door to door is a very safe activity. It's outside. Often you can incorporate a mask very easily into your outfit. So there's a lot of that can be done really quite well. The thing we would caution against is large indoor gatherings for Halloween. So, you know, indoor Halloween parties, you know, indoor Halloween festivals. Those are things that we would caution against, especially for kids who aren't eligible for vaccination yet. But for outdoor trick-or-treating, super safe, totally reasonable to move forward with that, even if your kid's unvaccinated.
Dr. Berry, I did not catch our case rate per 100,000 that you announced earlier. Do you mind repeating it?
Let me pull it back up, sir. So our current case rate in Jefferson, we are at 226 per 100,000. One person in the hospital for a total of 65 hospitalizations. Our total case number is 1,053 with a 5% positivity, which is really, our goal used to be 2% positivity, but with the number of home tests that we know we aren't accessing if they get a negative, 5% is really the goal at this point.
And as you said last week, Dr. Berry, our current vaccination restaurant mandate is temporary, and it's temporary in the sense that if we get down to 75 cases per 100,000 for 2 weeks. I just want to say that out loud again, because I got a ton of questions about that over the last few days.
So we have improved from where we were, but still seeing a significant amount of transmission. If we can get back into the moderate risk range, which most of the last 18 months, we've been in the low or moderate risk range. So it's a very reasonable goal for our community to get back there. If we can get our case numbers back below 75 cases per 100,000 and keep them there for 2 weeks, then we'll revoke the order. That's the plan right now. I think we can definitely do it as a community, but we need to all work on this together.
Did you hear that, community? We got this, people. Let's do this. And Willie, it was thrilling for me to meet you in person last week for the first time. I was like, oh my God, you're real.
He has more than just shoulders.
Yeah, I know. It was just kind of shocking. I realized I've been on the screen way too much over the last year.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting.